You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
That ball hit pretty well to left field. Back goes Winker, still going back. That ball's off the fence. Here comes Yuli. He's going to score. 3-2 Astros. Breggy with an RBI double.
All right, the Astros win 4-2. Great for them to get a win against the Seattle Mariners after falling and getting swept, of course, in Oakland against the Athletics. That was one of the many plays by Alex Bregman that stood out last night. He had scored on a pass ball. He had a go-ahead double. Good to see Breggy back to being Breggy.
Yeah, that was a nice night for Alex Bregman, who has delivered in a couple of spots recently, both against the Yankees and against the Mariners. And you're just hoping that he can stay healthy. And, of course, we had that scare in what was a very, very entertaining eighth inning. I wonder about the rest of this series, Vanessa, especially after Munoz almost hit Yuli Gurriel in the head with an 100-mile-per-hour fastball, hit him in the shoulder. I think there's going to be a brawl or some sort of scuffle by the end of this series, especially when you have Scott Servais, the Sailor Man, in the Mariners dugout always wanting to start fights like he's Popeye after, you know, popping some spinach. I think there's going to be a brawl at some point the rest of this way. I think the Mariners kind of have to do something, too. And I think if you're the Astros, you should stand above it, but you continue to let little brother know that he's little brother. He might resort to some devious tactics. And I mean, between that by Munoz and then also him sliding into Bregman the way that he did, Munoz is persona non grata in the Paul Gallant household. And this is a reason for me to leave the Mariners on red right now.
Leave them on red, you say?
Have you ever left someone on red?
Yeah.
Why do you leave them on red?
I mean, I don't have my read receipts on, just FYI, but I've ghosted. Yeah, and but there's always a reason.
Have you ever left your receipt on read to a person that was texting you?
Have I turned my read receipts on?
Isn't that the thing where it says like red?
Red receipts? Yeah, never.
Like that?
I've never done that.
Okay, you know what? Good for you. I've never done it either. Some people do it.
I feel like most people just turn it off immediately.
Right? Yeah. No.
But some people turn it on for specific people.
Here's the thing. I didn't even know you could
do
that.
I've never done it.
So shout out to you, because I didn't know you could do that.
No, I've never done it either. But
I think that there's a thing called a social signal. And if I don't text you back like twice and you continue to text, that's on you. And it's not my problem. Are the M's frauds? Are the Mariners, Paul's side chick, the one that he made half a shirt for, are they fraudulent? We saw some interesting plays last night. I did go to that game. The Ty France situation was interesting and had a lot of people booing him. Look, they're a young team. Mm-hmm. They're fun, but they're young. Where do you see them stacking up in the AL?
They looked like kids last night, for lack of a better term. They were in a bunch of big spots, and they messed up. I mean, Munoz with the pitch to Gurriel, I don't think it was intentional. I think it just got away from him. Cal Raleigh dropping the ball that was thrown to him when Yuli got a fantastic lead and was able to steal second base. A little bit later, when Alex Bregman's on third base, Munoz and Cal Raleigh, the Mariners catcher, they got crossed up and it's a pass ball. And the next thing you know, Bregman's scoring. Ty France hits a towering fly ball to left field and he jogs out of the batter's box. I think that was in the seventh inning. He's on first base and he gets into a double play not too long afterwards that helps the Astros get out of a bit of a jam. Julio Rodriguez has runners on and two outs and he strikes out. Every single spot where the Mariners, you would think a team that's actually one that threatens you, could have made something happen, they made like a mental error, it felt like. And maybe less so with Rodriguez striking out, but the rest of it, they just felt sloppy and not like a real threat. Now, it makes you wonder, like, who is the Astros' real second biggest threat in the American League?
It was a nice night for Urquidy. It may be his last night as an Astro. He got a standing ovation. It was a very nice moment. Here's Urquidy on the chance that he could be one of the guys traded by the Astros when that deadline comes around.
I will have the same focus, and I would like to stay here for many years, but I know this is a business. If that happens, I have to play and work hard.
There you go. Sounds like he and his agent know what's up and know that there's a strong possibility he could be one on the trading block.
Yeah. And what can you get for an Urquidy? I heard the bench talking about that this morning, Vanessa, and, you know, Josh Bell, which would be essentially, for now, a two-month rental from the Nationals as someone that people have thought, okay, well, maybe that would be a fair swap, but you're probably going to have to throw something else in there. And there was a caller who called into the bench, and he basically said, like, all right, well, would the Nationals really want Urquidy? Nothing against Urquidy. Urquidy's a good pitcher. He's under team control for a couple more years. But is Urquidy somebody that people are fawning over themselves to get? No, he's not. You know, I mean, take a look at the numbers last night. Was he good? Yes. But three strikeouts over the course of six innings. That's a guy that you like to have in your rotation if you're a contender. If you're a team that's on the rebuild, is that enough to part ways with a guy who I'm sure another team would be willing to pay more for a rental?
We'll see. That trade deadline is quickly approaching. There's been a lot of rumors on what the Astros could want or need, be it a center fielder, be it a left-handed reliever. We'll bring you all the news on that. And the Astros play the Mariners again tonight, by the way. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant here from Nick Caserio at Texans training camp. Plus, could you sell yourself the way Jimbo Fisher sells Texas A&M? Hear that coming up next.
Who's this?
Hey, this is Trey Wingo. You're listening to ESPN 97.5 Houston. Hello.
You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, we heard from Nick Caserio this morning, Texans GM. First time we've been able to chat with him for a while. First time you've chatted with him in general,
first time
I
ever.
Think.
Papa Chair.
This was his game day face. He was in the zone. Whenever somebody would ask him about, well, what about last year? It didn't even matter if it was something positive. He'd say last year does not matter. He was ready to move on. Gave well wishes, of course, to John Mechie III, updated on some housekeeping items. But we both got to ask him a question, and yours, I don't quite remember what it was, but we have it on here.
Yeah, so I asked him about how much time he needs to evaluate a young player, specifically a quarterback, because general managers are on a timeline. You have to, if you miss on a guy, press the eject button. And with Davis Mills, I'm very curious as to what the timeline is for when Caserio feels like he knows Davis Mills' ceiling, his floor, everything about him. Here was Caserio's answer.
I don't have all day. The clock is spinning. But I would say within a 18 to 24 month period, you have some semblance of an idea of where you think a player is or is not going to be. It doesn't mean that can't change. There might be something that happens earlier that kind of slows that progress. So, again, there's no timetable. There's nothing specific. So it's an accumulation of things over the course of time. And I think the word, if you want to use more than anything, is it's consistency.
He talked around it a lot throughout that very long answer. And as you said, Vanessa, this is definitely Caserio in midseason form already. But what I heard is in the middle of that is that they're going to make their evaluation of Mills based off of this year, which is smart, which is what should have been expected, but you want some sort of confirmation on it because there are a lot of teams that will continue to talk themselves into a young quarterback. And I think that the big benefit, it's funny that we are this way, since he wasn't a first-round draft pick, it's a little easier to move on from a Davis Mills, where in some of these other situations, say all of the teams that drafted a quarterback in the first round, if their guy doesn't work out, be it Trevor Lawrence or Zach Wilson or Trey Lance or Justin Fields or Mac Jones, they have to kind of stick with it a little bit longer just because of the way that those five-year rookie contracts with the player option as the fifth year work.
I think when you look at some of the other GMs before camp, they're a little bit looser, but I like that Nick Caserio is in the zone. This is a big year for the Texans. This is a big year for Davis Mills. And to your point, he gave you a great answer about evaluating and what that process is going to look like. I truly believe that they have a fresh start. If you listened to our show yesterday, you heard about the little media get-together. They have new marketing. They have, you know, branding. They've made some changes. And I'm excited to see what they can do. But it was a good first day at camp, very hot. There was an assortment of hats. I need to get a hat for Texans training camp. I really do.
A bucket hat?
I don't know know that I'm going to go. I don't like the way bucket hats frame my face. I may go the Steph Stradley straw hat route. baseball caps, the fabric gets a little too hot.
I'm done wearing hats.
Wait, why?
I'm done wearing hats to training camp.
Why?
Because I want to look good.
Yeah. Hey, according to Seth Payne, you and Brooks Cabino looked very good.
Here's the thing about hats. I've told people this all the time. Whenever I wear a hat, it's because I did not have time to shower and I did not have time to pimp my hair because I am annoying like that. I get made fun of all the time. I don't care. Put sea salt in it? Yes. Do I blow dry it? Yes. Am I Metro? Yes. You all know all of these things already. But I want to keep the brand going of me. I want to not ever wear a hat. Is that weird? Yes. Is it going to result in me getting skin cancer possibly? Yes. But I don't care. I'm done with hats, Vanessa.
I've been on the hat train more since the studies about sun have come out, and I realize how terribly I treated my skin in high school when I went to a tanning bed literally every day, junior and senior year and in college. So I'm going to get on the hat train. Let me know what kind of hat I should wear. Hey, can you sell yourself? Do you feel like when there's
on for what?
Hello. Back to the hooker conversation. When you're in a job interview and it's the elevator pitch, mm-hmm. Do you feel like you can do a good job? Because I feel like if I don't go into it with bullet points, I find myself being like, yeah, I'm reliable, smart, blah, blah, blah. It just gets awkward. Jimbo Fisher was asked on live television, how do you sell in the age of NIL, in the age of digital, as a head football coach of a major university? How do you sell being an Aggie? Here's Jimbo.
Listen. Here's what A&M has. It has the most complete package of any school in the country. When you're talking about culture of university, this place is unbelievable. When you get here and you'll see it, the commitment that people have. It's a top 20 educational school in the country. Education's through the roof. The commitment that we have made to our, for instance, right now, we're building a new $160 million facility right now that's going to be state-of-the-art, which no one in the country is going to have for your personal development and what we have. We have coaches that won the five coaches that have won a national championship. Ooh. We have coaches that have put as many NFL players in the NFL as we can. Afterwards, you're talking about this. We're the sixth richest school in the country with an $18 billion endowment for life after ball. You're talking about one of the two largest alumni associations in the country at 550,000 alums. There's 109,000 people at every game. You're playing an SEC schedule each and every time. And here's the important thing. Do you want to go somewhere that has won a championship or you want to be the first to do it? The people you remember, the guys that really make a difference in the world are the guys that are the first to do it. If you go somewhere else and just be another guy, you're just another guy. Come here and be the first guy to ever do it and set the standard for a new organization. Those are the ones that got statues outside that they talk about all the time.
That's pretty good sales pitch.
I mean, that was a hell of a job. He got into post-playing life and endowment of donors.
I'm surprised, though, that the Aggies haven't canceled him for this, Vanessa.
What do you mean?
They've won national titles, at least per them, in 1919, in 1927, in 1939.
100 years ago.
They claim those national titles. They are on the side of the stadium. And Jimbo Fisher, essentially, in that answer there, said that they have never won a national title. Yeah, that's right, 12th man. You've never won anything per your own coach. Think about that. You want that guy in charge?
Can you sell yourself? How do you sell yourself? Like, if you're, let's say you're in your dream job.
Okay.
And you're in the interview, and the head of the company looks at you and says, give me, you know, a minute of why I should hire you. How do you sell yourself?
I take off my shirt.
Whoa.
No, what I do is, in that spot, I mean, all you can be is personable, and you just be blatantly honest. That's all I do. I try to be as honest as I can at all times.
Be specific. Let me hear the Paul Maurice Gallant elevator pitch, and then I'll give you mine. And Sean, oh yeah, you got to do yours too.
You're going to get somebody who actually does take coaching very well, despite what he might sound like on the air. You're going to get somebody that cares way too much about this and does not have really that many interests outside of this field. You're just going to have somebody that's obsessed with the job to the point where it's actually going to make him unhappy when he does anything that's slightly less than 100%. Like, for example, a segment that we had at 10:45, which I'm still mad at myself.
Not that big of a deal.
I'm mad at myself about it, though. I feel like
mine was great
It was because it was a great segment idea by you. It was great execution by you, and I'm like, damn it, I felt like I didn't bring my A game for that segment.
It's okay, it happens.
I know. That's me.
That's a good sales. I would hire you. My name is Vanessa Richardson, and you can hire me because I'm going to work hard, but I'm also going to be myself. I don't cook. I don't clean. That means all my energy goes to work.
Anti-sexist.
And I really don't date a lot. So that means that you're going to get all of my energy. I'm slightly fashionable, but not too much. I like to think I'm a nice person, but I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not overly nice if I'm not feeling it. So that is how I sell myself. Sean, how do you sell yourself?
I'm very bad at this. I'm very bad at whatever. You
can rock a top knot.
You're trustworthy and humble.
Do you see the hair? I just am hardworking. I feel like I pick up on things quickly. So if there is something that I don't know, like I generally, you tell me how to do it once and I can figure it out.
Yes, you can.
Impeccable timing.
Yeah. Great timing.
I think you have great timing.
Yeah, you have great timing.
Like punctuality?
No, when we're on this show.
Oh, you have great timing. Like I get places on time.
I don't. So that I would never bring that up.
I also was like, well, as someone who tries to get here at like 8:45 and consistently get here at like 9:10 or 9:15.
The best is when Josh Beard fills in and he gets here at 9:45 every day, which is fine. He's filling. But
damn.
Every time he comes in, what is he throws down his stuff. He goes, there's traffic. I wanted to get here at 9. I'm like, dude, it's fine. You don't need to. But I was going to.
And it's always like, I got to get the kids out the door.
Like, I know you're a dad.
It is a lot like Paul, because Paul will do the same thing.
Paul does do the same thing.
See, I get mad at myself.
But you prep the night before, too.
True.
That's the thing, is that if you're prepping, you have to prep. You know, we have a two-hour show, so you need to prep for it. God, at least half an hour to an hour, right? So
I like to do 1 hour per hour.
Yeah. So do then, you know.
But then
as,
I go more. Then I do it way harder than I need to, and then I like end up doing worse prep because I prep longer.
But
I'm crazy.
Sometimes it's because you're in your apartment doing Mariners watch drops and whatnot.
Well, yeah, goofy stuff.
You should always
learning
be
the lyrics
able.
To songs.
I thought you were gonna say like sometimes it's because you're in your apartment doing marijuana.
Right.
You said mayor. I was like, wait a second, hang on.
Well,
that's illegal here,
it
ma'am.
Is. Well, great job, Jimbo, and I'm Vanessa Richardson, and I think you should always be able to sell yourself. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, I made a prediction about a major media personality in sports, and it turns out I was correct. Hear the latest on the LIV Golf Tour. That's next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real.
Let's go.
Fun. Sports. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
So there was a big rumor that one of the best media personalities, you could argue one of the only sports media personalities that people actually care about and watch a game for, Charles Barkley, or rather halftime, was going to join the LIV Golf Tour. He had said that he was having conversations with Greg Norman. He said if they tripled his salary, absolutely he would do it. I said, and you guys agreed, that this seemed to me just more like a leverage play, because if he went with LIV Golf Tour, he would have to end his basketball commitments. Those were his words. Probably have to back out of all of his endorsements and all of the money he makes. Well, today, Andrew Marchand reports, Barkley told the New York Post he has ended his discussions with LIV and is staying with TNT.
Phew. I mean, look. Do you want Charles Barkley ultimately talking about golf? Do you think Charles Barkley would want to talk about golf?
I think he'd be very entertaining.
I think he would get bored.
But it wouldn't be informative.
And it never really is with Charles Barkley, but Charles Barkley is one of the best basketball players ever. I want Charles Barkley talking about basketball in a goofy manner. Absolutely. I don't need to have things broken down the way that some people online have taken basketball, where it's like not even fun to talk about basketball on the internet anymore. But Barkley must stay with TNT. So I'm very thankful for this.
That has to be like the best studio show on television.
Oh, it
and
is.
It's not even close.
It's there's not, because most studio shows, let's be honest, suck, right? I mean, NFL Today or NFL on Fox, there's too many voices in the room. Fox, at the very least, has a little personality to it, but it's no discussions. It's someone talks for 15 seconds, next person talks for 15 seconds, next person talks for 15 seconds.
Yeah, The Fox one, there's also like 30 seconds of laughing between the 15 seconds of talking, which is good personality, and I like watching it, but it is a kind of a yuck fest.
It's formulaic. Like they're all, they all seem the same, and inside the NBA is like they just do random stuff.
It's one of the things that bothered me about like local TV was that there really isn't a flow. It's, hey, you give your opinion. Now it's my turn. Now it's your turn, to where radio and other mediums. That's why, look, like whether you like Barstool or not, Pat McAfee, all of those, the podcasting thing is because it's much more of an authentic. It's why you should listen to Vanessa and Gallant every day from 10 to noon on ESPN 97, and because Derek Carr is here with us every day.
It's one of the biggest bummers, Vanessa, about TV and you know, just to take like a big picture look at everything, that we put so much focus on televised debates as if that actually matters, like if that actually determines whether or not, say, a politician or something can do their job when, you know, they're talking for like 60 seconds at a time, as opposed to radio or podcast where people are sitting with each other for like 14, 15, 16 minutes. I remember when I sort of saw how the sausage was made when it came to TV, when I was in college at Syracuse, I was like, I'm out on TV right away. And I've been told many times, you should try TV. No, I mean, this is so much more fun. I mean, you don't have to waddle around with a stick up your butt. You can be PG-13 at the very least. And I don't know, this has always been way more appealing to me. So I'm glad that you're getting a taste of it, because it's definitely different.
It is a lot different. And when you look at different forms of medium, I think that one of the things that I heard Michelle Beadle say on a podcast a couple weeks ago, when she was talking about her tumultuous exit from ESPN the second time, she pointed to Inside the NBA as, there are so many shows that are pulled off the air now after 1 year. And it's everywhere. It's NBC, it's Fox, it's ESPN. They pull them off the air after a year or two, and they never give people the chance to develop chemistry, to build something, to start something. Inside the NBA, like on TNT, they've been together for years. Mm-hmm. And so they've really, like the producers and all of them, have given them a chance to ruminate and just say, make it whatever you want it to be made. Speaking of how the sausage is made, how is the sausage being made in Tennessee with Ryan Tannehill? You and I both, we may not agree on everything. We do agree that we don't think that Ryan Tannehill's career trajectory is going up.
Not anymore, right.
Anymore, and especially since losing that weapon, A.J. Brown.
I feel like this past season, what you got from Tannehill for a couple of years was like really improved play, and he deserved credit for it. Even I had to tip my hat to him. Because Arthur Smith was his offensive coordinator. But last year, without Arthur Smith, I mean, I felt like he came back to earth in the same way that Matt Ryan came back to earth a bit without Kyle Shanahan as his offensive coordinator. I mean, he won MVP. You could take a look at some advanced numbers with Ryan Tannehill when Arthur Smith was there, and you could legitimately, it would be backed in numbers and not by what you see out there, but you could have legitimately made an argument for Tannehill's a top five quarterback based off of some of those numbers. But I mean, he has a lot of criticism on him right now, and then they just took away his number one weapon. So he's being asked a lot of questions. I will give him credit for being at the very least honest and forthright, but he is saying that this past season was fuel. Do you buy into the idea that you know a playoff failure can really get more out of you than you've already brought to the table when you're at this phase of Ryan Tannehill's career, when you're in your early to mid 30s?
He says, you look at things in your past and experiences that you've been through, and you can learn from them and use them as fuel. I think it depends on the person. And you know what? We could wrap this around circuitously to Kyler Murray and the discussion. If Kyler is that bothered by it, he should use it as fuel. If not, it's just complaining. Ryan Tannehill is 2-3 in the postseason. If you guys remember last year, they were like the dark horse Super Bowl favorites at one point. People were saying that they were going to win the AFC. I hope he does use it as fuel, but I don't see how that happens, and I don't see how they can improve, especially with them losing such a big weapon.
Yeah, I don't get how you replicate that, and I feel bad for this Treylon Burks kid, too. I mean, you know, you're coming to training camp, and you got asthma issues, and you can't even be out there, and I mean, people are already second-guessing the Titans just because they moved on from A.J. Brown. And they're expecting this guy to be the same player. And like, I know there's a lot of receivers that are coming out of college now, and it seems like more and more of these guys are actually panning out. But, I mean, there definitely are flameouts, too. You know? I mean, take a look at everybody that New England's drafted, basically for their entire Bill Belichick era.
And you never know what you're getting with a rookie. To your point about
Oh, no, right.
I mean, that is a total – I don't care what round you take them in. I don't care how solid. We've seen it over and over again. You never know what you're – so they gave up somebody reliable.
Yeah.
And they're hoping for a rookie.
That's the part I really don't get, Vanessa. Okay, you were the one seed in the AFC last year, and you've dealt with a lot of injuries. And I think there are some people that thought you were kind of fraudulent with that record. But for whatever it's worth, you were able to secure the one seed in a very tough conference despite having – of all the like top teams in the AFC, clearly the quarterback with like the least amount of like skill. And after that season is done, where you might have only a couple more years of this team and the way it's currently constructed being able to be this good, you decide to move on from a guy and hope that you get a rookie wide receiver to be awesome from the get-go, which could happen. And we have seen it happen recently, like Justin Jefferson and Stephon Diggs and many more. Jamar Chase, but it doesn't always happen. And year one to year two, like that's generally when a wide receiver is going to be at his best, his second season in the league. Like I saw that with DK Metcalf, his second year. I mean, he was awesome, but it doesn't always happen like that. And to expect that it will, okay, I mean, you have faith in your scouting department, but you had something great and you didn't need to get rid of him unless your organization from the top down was just saying, yeah, we can't afford it.
Failure is fuel is such a self-help bookie type concept, and I don't think everybody uses it. There are people that do, and you heard Michael Jordan during that Last Dance documentary every time say, and I took that personally. You have Tom Brady, I think, who is the poster child for using failure as fuel. I think it's the sole reason he's still playing in the NFL is because he didn't win the Super Bowl last year. I think he is somebody that genuinely uses failure as fuel. Is Ryan Tannehill one of those guys? I don't know, but the AFC South certainly is up for grabs. I think it's between the Colts and the Titans. We, you know, can both agree on that. But him back, you know, they're back at training camp as well, trying to get things done. We had our little AFC South check-in segment. So admittedly, haven't read up that much on the Titans, but when you look at who they got rid of, who they're relying on, we know Ryan Tannehill is not set on mentoring Malik Willis. So hopefully he is using that failure as fuel, or else he may see a rookie quarterback sneaking up on him.
Give me all the bad headlines about the Titans, though, because their fans deserve nothing. They deserve all of the bad. They're so damn sensitive. They are, if we're going to call fan bases NFL quarterbacks, they are the Baker Mayfields because they constantly believe that they are disrespected. But in the grand scheme of things, I mean, they've always been like the seventh, eighth best team in the NFL. That's respectable, but it's not to be feared. It's not to be respected. And they get so mad when anybody calls them out on it. It's because they're more on football fans, Vanessa. You know, they're getting used to the fact that the Tennessee Volunteers are never going to be good again. And they latched on to the Titans, too. And, like, they don't understand how the NFL works.
Plus, people in Nashville are just annoying, to be honest. I know you've never been, but you'll go someday.
I do want to go to Nashville. All I will say is they have just I've had so many occasions where I've just tweeted something out that ended up being right, and their fans come out, and they get so pissed off.
It's because that's the only thing they have.
But Nashville seems pretty cool. I don't know. I think they have more than that. Now, I'm not talking about, like, the hill folk of Tennessee, you know, like the cannibals. You know, like the ones that are, like, on the border of, like, West Virginia.
Love them.
You know,
my people.
Have you seen Wrong Turn?
I have not.
With Eliza Dushku?
No.
And the girl who plays Sloane in Entourage?
No.
Okay, well, it's about cannibals in West Virginia.
Oh.
And I just like to think that, like, you can stretch that out from, like, West Virginia through Kentucky and into Tennessee. Like, that's where cannibals and squirrel eaters live.
A wise man once said, every interception tells a different story. And that man is going to be on your TV screen
just
talking about
jaw.
College football. That's getting coming mad. Up next on Vanessa and Gallant. Plus, of course, our Garbage Time segment coming up.
ESPN 97.5. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Brock is back. The return of Brock Osweiler is happening. He has joined ESPN. He'll be a college football, I believe, color commentator, if I'm not mistaken, alongside a couple of different folks. But I know you interacted with Brock Osweiler. I did not cover the Texans when he was with the Texans. You did.
I hated football that year, Vanessa.
What are your thoughts on him joining the booth?
You know what? I'll give him this. He was always polished when he spoke. He didn't tell you a whole lot, but I always felt like he might have a career in being a politician.
Really?
In Montana after the fact. I always felt like he He knew how to present himself. Good-looking Robert Pattinson-esque guy. I always thought, okay, there's something for him in this. And I'm not going to say, hey, like, bleep off. Like, you don't get a chance to work at this job. But I will say, like, every single press conference interaction I had with him, Vanessa, drove me crazy. And that entire year, that 2016 season, where the Texans made it as far as they've ever made it in the playoffs, was one of the most miserable years I can remember watching a football team, because Osweiler was just so bleh. And you felt like, okay, you just got to give this time. It's going to get better. And we were all telling ourselves the same bleeping thing. And then eventually in October, I think they played the Vikings. And I was just like, this guy's not good.
He's done.
He's not going to be good. And it's time to start thinking about what your options are for next year. But they kept on winning enough games to stay in the playoff race. And it was torturous, if that's a word. Every single game, you're just like, I know this guy is not going to push it downfield. I know that his slow windup is going to result in some ugly interceptions. You're basically just hoping that the running backs that he had behind him were going to do enough to get the Texans a W. And again, they kept on doing it. It was just a weird spot to be in. It was a successful team, but I was miserable covering that team. And I've covered, you know, multiple 2-14 2-14 seasons with the Texans.
You had a fun interaction with Brock Osweiler. Here's your media interaction. Do you have that queued up, Sean, with Brock Osweiler?
Do you feel there's been a consistent theme with the interceptions that you've thrown this year?
No, I don't. I think every interception really has a different story.
It's an incredible quote.
I guess they do.
I hope he says it on air.
What was the answer you were, like, imagining that he says there?
I didn't think that through.
Okay.
I just asked him, hey, there's
He's
a lot of interceptions.
Open-ended question, baby.
I just thought you were expecting, like, well, you know, having some trouble, whatever, at the line or something. Like, nope, just every interception has a story.
I think the next day that I asked Bill O'Brien about the interceptions that were being thrown, and I confused C.J. Fedorowicz and Ryan Griffin, and O'Brien, like, instead of addressing the question, just jumped down my throat about the fact that I had confused those two guys.
It's a very Bill O'Brien thing to do instead of just nicely correcting you.
There was another time a couple of months later where, yeah, there was something where I knew he had made a comment implying that Rick Smith sucked. So I asked him about the follow-up to it, and he brought up the time I confused the two tight ends. Like, this is like the time you did that. And so then I was pissed.
Memory of steel, that William O'Brien.
I was pissed. Because then I like went and I found the specific quote to read to him. Because I did it like in a nutshell one. I found it. And Amy Palchik told me, what are you doing? Like, to not ask the question.
Oh, no.
So after the press conference is done, I get up and Amy's like saying, like, why were you asking that question? And I was like, are you serious? Are you kidding me? And I'm like, you know me, my blood's starting to boil.
I know this, Paul.
And even John McClain came in. He was like, that was a perfectly fair question that he asked about the comments made the day before. So I like stormed out. I drive back and Amy calls me. And then like, I remember like talking loudly and just saying like I was, you know, me. And then like next thing I know, like O'Brien like called and we did talk for a little bit like behind the scenes after that. Like I thought we had like an understanding. But now I've had a bit of a change of heart as far as my relationship with Bill O'Brien in the last couple of days.
Well, when you learn things about people from behind the scenes that had to work much closer with people, thoughts always seem to change. All right, it is time for Garbage Time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage Time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
We love a good freezing cold take, and Barstool Sports tweeted out, 6 years ago today, Max Kellerman declared that Tom Brady was going to fall off a cliff. Tom Brady has won 3 Super Bowls since, might win a 4th, to which TB quote tweeted it and said, ratio, plus I have a swimwear line now.
Hell yeah.
And connected a link to his swimwear.
I was always very frustrated with the Max Kellerman era of
speak for your pizza TV. And he has since been moved elsewhere.
Yeah, what is he even doing now?
He's somewhere on ESPN.
He does the morning show.
The morning,
show
right?
Radio.
I think
morning radio, that's it.
I think that that was not a natural position for Kellerman. But that take about Brady was asinine. And the problem was he stuck with it for a year and then the next year. And he kept on saying he would fall off. And it used to make me very angry seeing Kellerman specifically like just continue to stand by this take. And it's like, okay, do none of you have the ability to admit you're wrong?
That's right.
Fine. We're talking about sports. We're all wrong.
Like, just
very
say you
often.
Got it wrong.
Yeah, and he didn't. So I like that Brady talked a little trash back to him.
There's now a place where you can complain about EA Sports' Madden NFL 23 and the ratings. The company, of course, launched the ratings as they always do, and then they also launched a ratings hotline where fans, players of the game, and theoretically actual NFL players can call and complain.
Yeah. They should make another hotline to call EA Sports and tell them that they've been half-assing Madden for years and that the monopoly that they have over the video game football industry is decidedly un-American, as is their half-assery. What is this, France?
Yeah.
Put some effort into the game, you thieves.
Yeah, there you go. Nice save. All right, what else do we have for garbage time?
Is that the correct word, eventually?
Sydney Sweeney. Do you watch Euphoria?
I do. I do.
Why are you smiling like this when I'm saying Sydney Sweeney's
name? Why do you think I'm smiling?
Are you a fan?
I am very much
Sean,
a fan.
Sean, how would you describe the grin on Paul's face right now?
Bleep eating. And like a cartoon wolf about to eat a ham.
The industry... Oh, she is hot. Okay, now I see the picture. The industry has changed. And she later this week told a magazine publication that she cannot afford. Now, this is a woman on one of the biggest shows in television. She cannot afford to take a six-month break. Quote, I don't have the income to cover that. I don't have someone supporting me. I don't have anyone I can turn to pay my bills. They don't pay actors like they used to. And with streaming, you don't get residuals. I have to give 5% to my lawyer, 10% to my agents, 3% or something like that to my business manager. And I have to pay a publicist every month, and that's more than my mortgage. Now, some people may say cry me a river, blah, 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 because she makes a lot of money on Euphoria. This is not a bad point, and this is actually a larger discussion about how streaming affects people getting paid, because I did not realize that if you're on a streaming app that you're not getting the residuals.
Yeah, I figured that was the case now. But it's a very, very, I can't even be out of work for 6 months on a vacation in my $3 million house that I bought. It's one of those stories,
yeah,
you know?
So you're kind of like, you're hot, but cry me a river.
Yeah.
Basically your story with Sydney Sweeney.
She needs the Live Tour to come in and just help her. That's what she needs.
Is she going to be a golf cart
Greg
girl?
Norman. Yeah, Greg Norman. Get on. I don't care if she's golfing, if she's in the booth. She replaces, since they couldn't make it work with Barkley, she slides in the booth. I don't care. Just get,
here's where I feel
help out Sydney, all right?
Here's where I feel a little less sorry for her. She just bought a house for $3 million in L.A.
Yes, that's all her money.
And
I can't take 6 months off from work.
Yeah. Do you know the property taxes on that? Come on.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I think you're onto something with the Live Golf Tour, Sean. She's a golf girl for the Live Laugh Love Golf Tour. Guess who is coming to the Live Laugh Golf Tour in 5 seconds if Sydney Sweeney's a golf cart girl?
Paul Gallant?
Well, yes, obviously. But who else? You guys should both be able to guess this person.
Wait, who else what?
Who else would jump to the Live Golf Tour if they found out that Sydney Sweeney was going to be a part of it? Who is the most horny man in sports?
Tiger Woods.
Boom.
Yeah.
Tiger Woods locked.
He's not over the Perkins waitresses yet?
Good question. I don't know.
And his first wife
is
blonde.
He's dating someone now, I think, right?
His first wife's hot. Paul Sorvino. Rest in peace. Pour one out for Paul Sorvino.
Yeah.
He once threatened, it has now come out. First of all, I didn't realize that his daughter was from Romy and Michelle's high school reunion. Shame on me. He once threatened Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, a TMZ reporter.
Because he found out that, do you have the audio?
Yeah.
Let's play it.
He ought to hope that he goes to jail. Because if we come across, I think he'll be lying on the floor somehow, magically.
Funny you should say that. So today...
love how he says
also,
whoops.
Also, the reporter, funny you should say that. Let's find a different way to approach the Me Too movement. Weird. But I love it because he sounded just like his character in Goodfellas.
Yeah, that was very mobster-ish. You know, I wonder if being in a mobster movie makes you feel like you are, or a TV show makes you feel like you were a real-life mobster.
I mean, some people get really into acting. Unlike Marlon Brando, who wouldn't even learn his lines.
Yeah, he's so lazy.
There are some people, like the Austin Butler guy, who like now thinks he's Elvis. You know?
He thinks he's Elvis now?
Yeah, he's like, did you see that story, Sean, where the guy that played Elvis was like obsessed?
I saw that headline, and I just thought, get over yourself.
Get over it. Yeah. Yep, get over it.
I figure this is like, the movie's not doing so well, so let's just highlight the fact that this guy looks like Elvis and acted like Elvis.
If I found out that somebody was abusing my child, like, I'm already psycho about my friends. I can't even imagine. So shout out to Paul Sorvino.
Yeah.
And RIP to all the mob heroes we lost this year.
Yeah, I know. What the hell?
Sonny Corleone, Ray Liotta, etc.
Paulie Walnuts.
Paulie Walnuts, that was the other one.
Tony Sirico, yeah.
Yeah, Tony Sirico. All right, coming up next, you got Davis Mills and Aaron Rodgers. Joel Blank and Jeremy Brand and the Killer Bees.
I think it's Derek Carr and Patrick Mahomes.
Are going to, nope. Mine was better. You're gonna hear them from 12 to 3, as you always do, 97.5, 92.5 ESPN. And then you'll have the Wheelhouse after that, guys. Thanks for tuning in for a fun Friday. We'll have more Texans coverage coming up next week, as well as Astros. Have a good day, guys.
Peace!
ESPN. 97.5.